You're listening to the 4130 Show. This is South Granville Church's After Church podcast, where we take a look at the sermon passage in more depth and think about how we can apply it during the week. Welcome, everybody, to the 4130 Show. My name is AJ Gretz. I am lead pastor here at South Granville Church. With me, as always, the guy who's looking fly, my friend Ben Netz.
Nice intro this time.
Yeah, I thought of it ahead of time instead of in the moment, so it was less awkward.
Nice job.
Yeah. And we are excited. We've got a special guest with us as well, our friend Ben's wife, Christina Netz. Christina, you wear a couple of different hats here. Could you talk a little bit about the roles that you fill at church and how long you've been around?
Sure. I've actually attended South Granville since I was very young. Pretty much it's the only church I remember attending. And I currently serve as director of children's ministries, and I have served in that capacity for almost 7 years. And along with Nicole Dorenboss, we do the youth group here. So I've been doing that for about 4 years, and then recently picked up the office work. So, yeah.
So you're busy.
Indeed.
Of all of those roles, which one is, I don't want to say your favorite, but which one do you find the most energizing and most fun for you? Is it making copies for me? That is the main question.
That's, yes, definitely copies. Mm-hmm. No, not really. I would say it probably varies depending on what's going on. Probably if I had to pick one, it would be children's ministry. It's just where my heart is, I think, the most. Youth is a very close second, I would say, but teenagers are challenging, so, yeah.
No one's ever said that before.
Right, exactly, exactly. And you know that we like a good dad joke on the podcast, and so before we started, we wanted to know, do you have a mom joke for us?
I actually brought two mom jokes today. That's awesome. So are you ready for this? They're good.
I think so.
Why is a computer so smart?
We don't know.
Because it listens to its motherboard.
That's good. That's a good one.
Yeah,
I like that. Do computers still have motherboards, or is that in the cloud now?
No, they still need a motherboard.
I obviously don't know anything.
Everybody needs a motherboard.
Okay, that's true.
And I like my second joke is, why did the baby strawberry cry?
I don't know.
Because his mom was in a jam. My kids did not laugh.
No. Oh, that's pretty good. I like that.
We did get some commentary from the kids, though.
Oh, you did?
As to how bad that joke was.
Okay, what did they say?
Oh, that was just terrible.
Oh.
Not funny, Mom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is what we're going for.
Right, right.
So that was
right. They don't understand that their reaction, like, is the joke, really.
Right.
Like, that's the point.
Yes. The joke is on them.
Yeah, yeah. So this week we jumped ahead to Genesis 22, and just when we thought the Abraham and Sarah story was finally coming to a happy ending, there's one last challenge. So they finally had a child named Isaac, and this is the child that is going to have offspring that begins the line of Israel. But then in chapter 22, God appears and says that he is going to test Abraham, and he asks Abraham to bring Isaac up onto a mountain in order to make him into a sacrifice. And so when you read through the story, there's this kind of sense of dread, I guess, and just a strong sense of uncertainty, because God has promised that Isaac is going to be the one who creates the line of Israel, and now he seems to be changing his mind or going back on that and asking Abraham to sacrifice him. So it's a difficult passage. It's one that Jews and Christians have wrestled with pretty much since it was written. But what we talked about on Sunday is the idea that testing is about purification, that it's God's way of looking at what's going on in our hearts and trying to make us stronger. And in this case, God is trying to strip away Abraham's attachment to the blessings or to the promise of offspring. And he's really just trying to make sure that Abraham is centered fully on God and in relationship with him. And so he brings Isaac up onto the mountain, and Abraham is amazingly willing to make the sacrifice. And right at the last moment, God intervenes. An angel appears and says, no, there's a ram on the mountain. You can sacrifice him. And Isaac is spared. So as we wrestle with the story today, we have to both process the fact that God would ask one of his people to do something like this, and also, you know, think about what it means to be tested by God in the different ways that we experience that as Christians in 2020. So one of the questions that we had in the small group guide this week, I think is really interesting, because we're thinking about what it means to be tested by God. And I'm curious if somebody came up to you guys and said, I think God is testing me, or does God test people? What's your way of understanding that? What do you think that means, especially for us as Christians?
I guess when I think about God testing me or us as a married couple or a family, I think about it as an opportunity to refocus our priorities. Oftentimes when I feel like God is farthest away, it's when we need to take a look at something we're doing or something that's going on in our life that's affecting our relationship with God. So like just as a chance to say, okay, it's time to refocus, to bring things back.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, feeling distracted, or feeling like your priorities are out of sync or something.
Exactly.
Okay.
I agree. I have to. I'm married to her.
Right. I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, I understand. Do you think everything that is bad or hard is a test from God? Or do you think certain situations are deliberate, quote-unquote, tests, and certain things are just sin? Is there a distinction there, do you think?
I think it's hard to figure out where that lies. I don't think we're ever going to hear at the end of something like, hey, good job, you passed the test. I think it all depends on how we perceive each situation. I don't have any tips or tricks or how to do that, but that's just kind of where I'm sitting. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think some things are just a result of our poor choices in general, but like there's probably some more major things that are God pulling us back in the direction he wants us, or giving us a chance to refocus on our relationship with him.
Sometimes I feel like when things just keep going against the grain or not your way, and there are things that are just like out of your control, I think it's those times that sometimes I'll step back and say, well, maybe this is a test. You know, I can't control any of this. It just keeps happening. What is something here that I can learn from this?
Yeah, and there's, not to like go way down a rabbit hole, but there's a difference, I think, between saying God has orchestrated something or caused something versus saying God has chosen not to intervene. You know, so in a sinful world, people, you know, get in car accidents. And I think we've all had that experience where just at the last minute, you happen to catch something out of the corner of your eye, or the light changes, or you feel like you're like spared, or you might feel like, wow, God protected me today. But then other times you get rear-ended, right? Or something happens and you say, well, did God cause that, or did he simply allow it? And is there a difference? Why would God choose to intervene this time, but then next time I still got a ticket, or I still got into an accident or something? And it's hard, and I guess it's interesting to me because I wonder how much it matters or how much it's helpful. But I think Christina's point is really good, that when there are challenges, regardless of maybe what's behind it, we can do ourselves a favor by seeing the opportunity in it and saying, this is an opportunity to kind of refocus or recenter or ask, like, what's really most important to me, you know? Am I getting more worked up about the scratch on my car than is really warranted, or you know, something like that? So when you read the story, do you think it's fair that God tests Abraham in this way? Is this, is this an easy story to digest, or is it one that you struggle with at all?
as a parent, it feels incredibly unfair. Mm-hmm. They finally have this blessing of this child, and then God's like, nope, gonna take it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I had always kind of wondered, did Abraham know all along while he's walking up the mountain, or was he knowing, like, well, we don't have a lamb to sacrifice, maybe it's my son, or maybe God has a lamb up there waiting for me. I just mm-hmm. have to wait and see what is in God's plan.
You can picture, like when you're climbing, you can't see everything, mm-hmm. and you can see, like, at the top, I'm expecting to see a goat tied up or something.
Right.
And then you get there and you're like, oh, there's nothing here.
Yeah, now what?
Now what? Now I really have to do this. Yeah. What do you do then? Because there's other stories like this where I think from a human perspective, it is really hard. It's hard to get on board with what God is doing, or to, you know, this isn't one that you're necessarily going to share with your non-Christian neighbor right away, you know. So what do you do with that? How do you make peace with a story like this, or do you?
We have the fortunate situation that we know how the story ends, so I guess you look at it as an opportunity to learn for yourself and to think about how you view things and how you want to live your life. Could you do that? Could you sacrifice your mm-hmm. own child?
Mm.
You know, any child, no matter if you waited forever for that child or not. I think if you look at the story and you look at it at that perspective, that's mm-hmm. that's how I would look at it anyways.
Yeah. I think there's an application to when, as a parent, where, ideally God is not asking me to, you know, murder anyone, hopefully. But as a parent, you are trying to help your kids grow up in faith and listen to God and follow God's leading. And, you know, especially in West Michigan, where we have a lot of really, like, close-knit families, it can cause some friction for somebody to grow up and say, yeah, I feel like God wants to be, you know, me to do missions, or I'm going to do this thing that means moving to California. And, you know, I talk to parents sometimes. That's really hard for them. They feel they want everybody close to the nest. And I think there's a way that we sacrifice our children, as bad as that sounds, like, not by physically doing that, but by allowing them to live their life on their terms in the way God wants them to, even if that's not convenient for us, or even if that means more distance, or they're doing something that doesn't make a lot of money for them, or it causes problems for them. But we have to let them go in that sense.
Yeah. I always tell my kids they're not allowed to leave. So mm-hmm. probably should reevaluate that, I guess.
Right. Because, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, we live 15 minutes from my in-laws. And I really wanted that because we lived so far from both of my families as a kid. And I was like, man, I want my kids to have somebody in their life who is local and can go to the soccer games and all that. It's really beautiful. But if our kids feel a call to something that takes them away, or, you know, to live in a dangerous neighborhood or something, like, we have to make sure that's coming from God. But if it is, then we got to bless it, you know, we got to let it happen. So Ben, I'm going to pick on you. When you're in those situations where you're being tested or you feel challenged by your circumstances, what are some of the things that help you stay grounded or stay faithful? What helps you cope in a healthy way?
Sure. Well, you know how the saying goes, hindsight is 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I'll take a minute to try to remember all the things that God has already gotten us through as sort of a reassurance of whatever's standing right in our way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe 30 days from now, we'll look back on it and say, yeah, we made it through that.
But that's cool. Like, you feel like you can look at the story of your family and say, we went through this and we went through this and we went through that. And
yeah,
we're still here. Yeah. I think that's very helpful because we're so quick to forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we forget about the crisis from 2 years ago and we forget how that felt in the moment. But then you look back and you're like, yeah, God was really there.
for sure.
What about for you, Christina?
I would tend to agree with that. Just looking at how God has taken our family through different situations, when we look back, we say, oh, it's obvious I had to go through that in order to get to this point. Mm-hmm. And I'm also one that I pray every day, but sometimes it's probably more of a just a habit, and maybe there's not as much thought put into it as there should be. So when we feel tested, if you will, by God, I just tend to go back to prayer. Like, okay, refocus, reevaluate what I'm looking at, and pray about it. Mm-hmm. Like, really pray about it.
And that kind of fits with what you said earlier about the opportunity to like refocus or reorganize your priorities.
Yep, exactly.
And that's, I would say that too, that like a lot of times, regardless of, you know, what is the nature of the circumstance? Is God testing me? Am I just in a hard time? Whatever. That's an opportunity for me to be like, okay, why am I struggling? And partially it's because my hope or my attention is elsewhere instead of being in God first, or, you know, yeah, like the daily practice of spending time with God has gotten shorter and shorter, mm-hmm. or more and more perfunctory. And all of a sudden my heart is kind of distant, or I'm putting too much stock in some material thing or some circumstance or something.
Exactly.
No, that's good. Anything else that, you know, you would be willing to share as far as saying like, this has really helped our family when we've been through a tough time? This is something that we did that really reminded us of what was true.
One thing we did last summer, kind of for the first time, because our kids are now finally getting old enough, is we took a real like true family vacation for a few days. And I feel like getting away from all the normal stuff really helped us as a family to sort of reconnect and get closer together and grow closer to God as a result of that too.
Yeah.
So I feel like being intentional with a block of time to like separate ourselves away from the mundane rat race.
Yeah. And that's such a good word, because if you are not intentional, stuff just kind of happens to you or at you. Right. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, where did the summer go? Or where did this season of life go? And so to be proactive, I'm doing pre-marriage counseling for a couple, and that's what we talked about last night, was like, you have to be proactive and intentional, or else, yeah, all of a sudden you've burned through everything you want to watch on Netflix and a bunch of stuff that you didn't even care if you watched. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, we have nothing left to say to each other. Not that I know what that's like. But.
Yeah, it's true. Definitely taking a step back. Last night was a perfect example. I have tons of work to do every day, and I often take it home with me. Mm. And Carter kept asking me, will you play Mario Kart with me? Will you mm-hmm. play Mario Kart with me? And so I just let it all go, and it was great. I mean, we had a great time. I did beat him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was time out of a few, but I certainly let him know I beat him.
Yes.
And just took the time, and it's just amazing how much of a difference that makes in your relationship together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
I didn't play at all. I stayed out of that match.
He was afraid mm-hmm. he would lose to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't play, you can't lose.
It's true. I did beat Lucas too. So. Okay.
She is pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, AJ, as we look back over the story about Abraham and possibly sacrificing his son, but the Lord intervening, it's not the happiest of stories, but it does give us a minute to pause and think, what are some things we can put into action this week to help us remember the story and also some of the things that God might be telling us?
I really liked what you were saying about looking back on what God has done. And it made me think about this weekend. I was just randomly going through one of our bookshelves, and I found a journal from like 10, 11 years ago. And I had it for a couple of years. So there's stuff from seminary and stuff from right before seminary in there. And reading through some of the stuff I had written and prayers, it was really good for me and really interesting to see some of those things continue to be issues, and some of those things I'm still wrestling with some of the same stuff. But then there were prayers in there that definitely felt answered, or things that was like, ah, oh, this feels so uncertain, and now feels much more clear or resolved. So it was cool. It was kind of a fun exercise to see, like, this is the way God has cared for us as a family and led us through like a really interesting decade of our life. And I just love that suggestion, especially if you're in a time of uncertainty or you're going through something difficult. Yeah, take half an hour and just kind of write out, what have I seen God do this year or the last 5, 10 years, or, you know, at other moments in your life? Like, how has God shown himself to be faithful? Because sometimes remembering what he's done in the past is going to help you believe what he can do in the present or going forward as well. I like that.
Do you like it, Christina?
I do.
Okay. She's also obligated to say that. But yeah.
So coming up this next Sunday, are there some things that maybe you can give us to do a little background research before we go into Sunday sermon?
We're going to talk about Jacob and Esau. So Isaac's kids, he has these twin boys, and it's a long story, and it kind of spreads over a few chapters. So we're going to look at the end of it in chapter 27. Yeah, for anybody who's maybe looking for something to read or to do for devotions the next few days, reading through chapters 25 through 27 would give you a head start for Sunday, because there's a lot of background there. And, you know, it's one of those stories where everybody is kind of awful, and you kind of leave and you think, why is this in the Bible? What is the point? And we're going to see that the point is that even when we're terrible people, God is still faithful to us. But like, literally, every single character is flawed and does bad things. And yeah, it's like watching an episode of Seinfeld or something. So it's interesting. It's an interesting story, but the more background you could do, probably the better.
Newman.
Yeah. And then Esau is living by the Kenny Rogers roasted chicken.
Getting that sweet tan.
Yeah.
From the glowing sun.
That's going to wrap it up for us this week. We want to say thank you to Christina Netz for being here. It was an honor, and someday making copies will be your favorite part of the job. That is my promise to you.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. But we want to say thank you for listening. Ben, tell people what they can do to help support the podcast and where they can find it.
It helps a lot if you share our podcast on social media. We'll be posting this to Facebook, so just share our post to your own personal pages and suggest it to friends. The more you listen, the better.
The more Jesus loves you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true. Just listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this week. We will see you next time.
Bye. You want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Chup. You heard of that one?
Mm-mm.
Mayo and ketchup together. They have mayo Q now too. I saw mayo and barbecue sauce together.
In the same bottle.
That's in worse. The same bottle.
All yeah. Stirred together.
Oh, so it's that like cloudy.
It's a really odd brownish gray color.
I can feel it.